This is a podcast from LBC. Britain decides. Follow the general election from every angle on LBC.
As the battle for number 10 heats up, we count down to the general election. From LBC, I'm Ian Dale.
And I'm Sheila Fogarty. This is Britain Decides. That's LBC's election podcast. And we're going to delve, are we not, Ian, into the big election issues of the day. Actually, before we do that, for me, the overarching thing has been Theresa May has not had the cakewalk that she first thought she was going to have, has she?
Well, you're not wrong there. We're not in landslide territory anymore, are we?
No, we're not.
Or are we? We'll find out in a minute.
Well, we'll find out in a minute, yeah. More on all of this coming up. We'll talk on specific policies in a minute, Ian, but I've been fascinated by how Theresa May, she said right at the beginning, didn't she, when she became Prime Minister and then reiterated it at the beginning of this election campaign, I'm not about the show. I'm about getting the job that's in front of me done and done well. And yet, the campaign, the whole election campaign has been about Theresa May, Theresa May's personality.
And that's because her spin doctors, her campaign strategists, decided it should be that way. And I've never really bought into this narrative that Theresa May doesn't have a personality. She clearly does, otherwise she wouldn't dress in the way that she does. She takes a lot of care over her appearance, the kind of clothes she wears, not just the shoes. And I think I've known her for, 15 years now, and she's not somebody I've ever thought of as a boring woman, somebody who doesn't have a personality. But this narrative has been allowed to sort of emerge that she is rather tedious.
But isn't that because she... Two things occur to me. One, she doesn't mix much, does she, with the Westminster lobby, yeah, be that MPs or journalists. But also, her whole approach to having a personality is to wield it extremely carefully. She isn't out there speaking to you every day. She isn't out there convincing you of things left, right and centre. She uses her personality, but she uses it very cautiously, it seems to me. And for that reason, people start to think that there isn't one there.
And I think that's the right thing to do, because you contrast her with what went before, with David Cameron commenting on every sort of minor celebrity that happened to die in front of the television cameras every single day. I've always taken the view that a prime ministerial interview ought to have a sense of occasion about it. And with her, I think it generally does. And your point about not being particularly clubbable, that's true. I remember at a party conference once, I was having dinner in a restaurant, I don't know, about 9 o'clock in the evening. And normally, cabinet ministers at conferences will go out with political editors or editors of national newspaper. And somebody said, "Oi, look over there." And there was Theresa May, the Home Secretary, having dinner with her husband. And I thought, well, why not?
Absolutely. On the question of that personality, in the first half of this election campaign, it was, we'll come on to Jeremy Corbyn and Labour in a minute, but it was Theresa May's team. I mean, you barely saw the word Conservative on any of the electioneering, either the leafleting or the posters and the things she stood in front of and what have you. But the social care announcement changed all of that.
We are the only party in this election prepared to face up to the reality of our ageing society and offer a long-term solution.
Then, when she tried to convince everybody that there had been no change, when in fact there had been a screeching U-turn.
What I've done today is I've seen the scaremongering, frankly, that we've seen over the weekend. I've seen the way that Jeremy Corbyn wants to sneak into number 10 by playing on the fears of older and vulnerable people. And I've clarified what we will be putting in the green paper, which I set out in the manifesto.
She lost support there. The party lost support. She lost personal approval, I think, because of that. And we're at the point now today where she has to try and wrest some of that back.
Well, you look at Margaret Thatcher's famous phrase.
You turn if you want to. The ladies not for turning.
Theresa May ought to have a different version of that. And if you're going to do a U-turn, do a U-turn. Don't do a semi-U-turn. There's no such thing as a semi-U-turn. And that's what she did. And it never works. What she should have done was ditch the policy altogether, which in a general election campaign would have been, as Sir Humphrey Appleby might say, a little bit courageous. But Tony Blair and David Cameron could always turn those circumstances to their advantages, because they both executed huge U-turns. But they said, look, well, we've listened. Do you want politicians who listen to the people or not? And you can imagine a scenario where they could have actually played that to their advantage. Maybe it's too late to do that now.
I'm going to argue that it has been...
Go on, you
I'm
argue.
Going to argue that it has been dumped. In effect, it is no more. The positive in it was that you keep at least £100,000 of the value of your home and your assets. But she will not say where the cap will be.
And it's because she doesn't know.
Well, exactly. But there are people I've been speaking to, just my friends, family around, who, unless they know that cap, they can't decide whether they support this policy or not. For me, it's gone. It's dead in the water.
It was interesting last night on the Sky Channel 4 debate that the chap in the audience with the striped tie, the rather elderly gentleman who asked the question on this, clearly didn't get the answer he wanted from Theresa May. But outside, being interviewed by Tamara Cohen afterwards, he said he was still going to vote Conservative. Now, I don't know. I have no feel as to whether that will be the case for the majority of people who really are concerned about this issue. Because the problem they've got with this, it is an issue which politicians have got to grapple with, so credit to them for actually trying to do that. But they didn't even tell Jeremy Hunt, the Health Secretary, or Damien Green, the Welfare Secretary, what the policy was until a few hours before it was announced to the media. Well, that's what Tim Shipman said in the Sunday papers, and he's fairly plugged into these things. Now, this is not a policy which you can explain to people in 30 seconds. It's not something a Conservative canvasser on the doorstep can say to a floating voter, well, this is why you should vote Conservative. I mean, when I first saw it, it took me some time to really get my head around it. I'm not sure I still have even today.
But let's not forget the phone-ins. That policy was announced
toxic
when I was on air, the phone-ins that day. 2 hours we did on that one policy.
I can beat you. I did three.
Oh, did you do three?
And I think I had the same callers. Well, not the same callers, but the same kind of call that you did.
I mean, it was a deluge, and it was just, let's just stick with this because this is the only thing that people wanted to talk about. What about Mr. Zen?
Look, there's nothing in there because we're not going to do it.
We saw Mr. Zen for the first time properly in the Andrew Neil interview on Friday, where I watched that, and I always try and watch these interviews through the eyes of floating voters. If you can do that, I try to do that. And sort of you try and ignore your own views. And I thought initially that he'd had a complete car crash in that interview because none of his answers stood up. I didn't think so. But actually, looking back at parts of it again, Andrew Neil didn't rattle him at all. He just had this Zen-like persona. And we saw it again a little bit last night with Jeremy Paxman.
There's going to be a deal.
There is going to be a deal. Would you leave Europe without a deal?
We will make sure there's a deal.
How much money are you prepared to give to Brussels in order to get a deal?
Jeremy, there are going to be negotiations over all of that.
Jeremy Corbyn just sort of smiled sweetly and just remained calm almost at all times. There was one occasion when he nearly lost it, but he sort of held himself in check. And that's quite interesting that he's learnt to do that, because he's quite a tetchy character in interviews normally, but he seems to have got rid of that side of his character.
Well, he didn't smile sweetly in an interview I heard this morning when he was being asked about childcare costs and free childcare, unmeans tested, for 1.3 million kids, I think it is. He didn't know the figures. He didn't know how much it was going to cost, let alone how they were going to cost it to pay for it. And he didn't lose his cool, but he was not Mr. Zen during that interview by any means. And that whole question of childcare is a big one for a lot of people, I think. Certainly whenever we talk about it on the radio, we get tons and tons of calls, not least from the industry itself, the nursery industry itself.
It really is an industry. It is
an industry that they've been telling. Since George Osborne announced it when he was Chancellor, they've been telling the Conservatives that this policy isn't paid for and we can't pay for it and we can't lay the costs on the middle class and wealthy parents. So neither party, it seems to me, has costed their childcare offer.
I wonder how many people cast their vote mainly because of the party's childcare policies. I've got no answer to that. I don't know. There are some issues where people think, well, that is so important to me that I will vote for the party that promises me this. I think whether Theresa May gets any sort of landslide or not will depend largely over the next 8 or 9 days. Can she frame this election, A, about Brexit? Because bear in mind, Sheila, that's what this election was originally all about. We seem to have forgotten that, although she has made a speech today.
You see, she said that's what this election is all about. She doesn't get to say what an election is about. The people whose doors open to speak to her and her fellow candidates on any side, whichever party, they get to say what an election is about. And when do politicians not learn that?
To an extent, you're right. Ted Heath suffered that experience in 1974, the election about who governs Britain. Well, it was decided that he didn't. I'd be surprised if that was the outcome this time. But the result is clearly, well, I say clearly, judging from the narrowing of the opinion polls, and they have narrowed, although not as much as I think they need to for Corbyn to really achieve anything, I don't think they're going to get a majority of 180, but it wouldn't at all surprise me if they still got a majority of 70 to 100. And yet the media narrative of that will be to say, well, that's a complete failure, which, of course, is ridiculous, because Margaret Thatcher was elected with a majority of 44, and she and everyone else thought that was a really, really good majority.
What if she doesn't get even a decent majority? What if she gets a majority and is still the Prime Minister, still a Conservative government, and all this banging on about, I need a large majority to go and negotiate in Europe, which to me rings hollow every time I hear it.
Really? Why?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's as clear as night follows day. The bigger the majority she has, the more powerful she is in the negotiations.
Because?
Well, I've just said, because she'd have a big majority.
Why is the majority?
Well, she'd have the country behind her.
She's told us what she's going to do in Brexit. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter whether a majority is 1 or 201.
Well, I think you'll find it does when you try and take the Great Repeal Bill through Parliament.
Yeah, well, it does within the Conservative Party, but that's what got us into this mess in the first place.
Oh, controversial, Sheila Fogarty. Controversial.
Well, it's true. So if she gets a kind of a low majority, what will that do to her standing in her own party, do you think?
If she ended up with exactly the same majority that she's got now, naturally people will say, well, we spent £140 million of taxpayers' money on that election. To what avail? You'd be absolutely right. But I don't think you believe that's going to happen. I certainly don't believe that's going to happen. So what's the point in speculating?
I've no idea. Some
people think she would have to resign, which I think is lunatic.
Win and then
but,
resign.
But, I mean, let's indulge ourselves in a bit of fantasy politics.
Who would that be? I've no idea, because we went through that, didn't we, in the immediate aftermath of Brexit. Would Michael Gove try again?
I don't think Michael Gove
would
stand a cat in hell's chance.
Would Boris try again?
Possibly. How about, I think it would narrow down to two.
And they would be?
Amber Rudd.
Yes.
And David Davis.
Again?
I should declare an interest here, shouldn't I?
Go on.
In that I was his chief of staff in 2005.
I was about to raise that. Yeah. We called him Mr. Zen. I think Jeremy Corbyn is Zen because he doesn't really care if he wins or not. He's still transforming the Labour movement. That's his priority.
I wonder whether he now is starting to believe that he could win. And I wonder whether that's the reason that he's suddenly become this much more polished performer, somebody who can deal with very hostile questioning. I don't think he will win, but I think he's beginning to believe that it's possible. I don't think his advisers believe that it's possible. And you say, well, he doesn't really care if he does win or not. And Ian Lavery, his co-election coordinator, if that's the right, co-campaign coordinator, he rather let the cat out of the bag the other day when he said, regardless of the result, this is just the beginning of the Corbyn project. And what he should have said is, this is the beginning of the McDonnell-Seamus Milne project, because that's what this is. It's that Jeremy Corbyn is a useful tool for John McDonnell and Seamus Milne, but he's sort of dispensable.
Yeah, and when I say he doesn't care if he wins or not, I don't mean that in a kind of glib way, or that he is like blasé about it. I don't believe for a second that Jeremy Corbyn is blasé about it, because the closer you get to power, I'm sure it smells nicer by the minute. But I don't know, I've never been there. But the reality is, I think that they are much more interested in this transformation and return to what they would regard as true Labour values. I think that's their absolute priority.
Absolutely right.
The election. More from LBC's election podcast in just a moment.
This is Ian Dale and Sheila Fogarty with Britain Decides, LBC's podcast, as the countdown to the general election reaches its final push. Well, Sheila, there's only, 8 days of campaigning to go. I think we had the biggest, I was going to say debate, but it wasn't a debate. It was an interview, the biggest electoral event last night, the Sky News Channel 4 debate, which I have to say I found a really disappointing occasion, both in format, in presentation. And I didn't think we learned anything about the two candidates for Prime Minister that we didn't know before.
It's interesting. I tend to agree with you. And I read a piece in the Times this morning, as somebody who was there in the audience, and she wrote a piece about it. And she said what the candidates did during the break, the commercial break, was more telling than what they did while they were, you know, being recorded or live or in being interviewed. Theresa May in the break went and spoke to the audience and they lapped it up. They loved it. Jeremy Corbyn,
I thought she didn't talk to normal people. That's
the
narrative that has been built
all.
Up, hasn't it? And it's ludicrous.
Yeah, well, she did. Well, that's what she did. And Corbyn went off stage with his advisers.
I have to say, I thought Jeremy Paxman became a parody of himself in those two interviews. I thought they were simply appalling. It was an old style of interviewing which does not work now.
Horrified at the very idea of a
you
nuclear attack.
You promised to win you a nuclear weapon.
It's there.
Is that
in the
morally
programme.
Right?
Listen, it's there in our manifesto because our conference voted for it.
There is nothing in this manifesto about getting rid of the monarchy, which is another thing you believe in, isn't it?
Look, there's nothing in there because we're not going to do it.
If I was sitting in Brussels and I was looking at you as the person I had to negotiate with, I'd think, she's a blowhard who collapses at the first sign of gunfire.
He didn't get anything out of either of them. If you were a political editor looking for a newsline for your news bulletin afterwards, that wasn't really one because he didn't give either of them a chance to give any answers.
I saw somebody... you always watch these events with... Well, I do anyway, with Twitter at
hand
as well.
Yeah, it's always a mistake.
I love it. I saw somebody, and I genuinely can't remember who now, but who of Jeremy Paxman's approach said... he's an analogue interviewer in a digital age,
yeah.
And it's not working. And I thought that was a rather good way of
describing
it.
Well, I think you and I have a little bit of a similar approach to interviews in that we actually think that if you're interviewing someone,
you ought to give
them a chance to say something. And Jeremy Paxman generally, in those interviews, did not do that. And I thought that he had Theresa May completely rattled for the first few minutes of the interview, where she should have just... bulldozed on. Can you imagine Margaret Thatcher in that interview? She wouldn't have let Jeremy Paxman shut her up. But as soon as Paxman started speaking, Theresa May just went silent. After a while, she thought, no, I'm not going to do this. Mm. And towards the end of the interview, she rallied and actually put in quite a good performance in the last few minutes.
I think both Theresa May and Corbyn have in themselves, they have a gentleness about them, don't they, when they communicate? She's not a convincing orator for that reason,
no.
Because an orator needs to feel like they can just give a bit of welly when they speak, and she isn't an orator. He isn't an orator either. And I think when they are on the receiving end of interviews, like the one we saw yesterday, that gentleness can be a real sort of disadvantage, I think.
And I thought the audience didn't really play their part either. In that, I mean, a lot is made of people laughing at Theresa May. 30% of the audience were firm Labour voters, so it would have been them that were laughing at Theresa May. Tories are intrinsically much more polite, and so they wouldn't do that to Jeremy Corbyn.
Well, also, this account that he claims in the Times was said that actually the audience was much friendlier to Theresa May than...
Really?
Than had been, yeah. Than in the reality of being in the room, it felt friendlier towards a friendly
audience.
Okay,
because it didn't come across that way on the screen,
did
it?
No, it didn't, no.
And with the bloke saying bollocks.
We are as one. I was literally about to say the man-mouthing bollocks.
It's a good bit of camera work there, because obviously
yes.
When you're trying to search out for the memorable moments,
yeah.
And we can say that on a podcast, which we couldn't say on the radio.
Yeah, so bollocks.
I bet they edited out, though.
I think
that is a really good way to end this first election podcast.
I promise we won't edit out bollocks.
Good.
This was fun.
I promise we've covered all the ground in this one. How do we do it again tomorrow?
Well, we didn't deal with UKIP, so
yeah,
we can do that another time.
Well, that's it for Britain Decides, LBC's podcast on the big election issues. See you tomorrow.
That was a podcast from LBC. Follow the general election from every angle on LBC. On FM in London, on DAB digital radio, and online at lbc.co.uk.